home.
Now, if you love music and live music, you're in for a treat. Paolo Morena, aka the Mighty Small, is in the studio. He is a Chelmsford based singer, songwriter, and looper, and also writer of books now as well. So he's joining us live in the studio, going to play a few tracks. It's great to see you.
Oh, we're on. Right, cool.
Yeah, we are. What are you doing? Looking through your book?
Sorry, I'm messing up.
He's reading a book. What are you doing?
I'm reading a book. I'm very well. Thank you very much. It's lovely to see you. Lovely to be back. Great to chat.
You come from a musical background. Yeah. You've got a musical family.
I have a musical family. On my father's side, there was the family band. So my uncles, my father, and my grandfather, they all had day jobs. They were hairdressers and mechanics during the day. And in the evening, they would go out and play on the Brentwood scene, the Meads Ballroom many, many moons ago, and many other places as well. And that's actually where my mother met my father. She was a groupie, came along to one of the gigs and met him there. My father played guitar and bass guitar and sung. My uncle Tino played accordion. And my uncle Alf played the piano. And my grandfather played the drums. And they would hit it up and jazz on that. And then on my mum's side of the family, my grandfather Sid, they were sporty and musical. So he worked for Chappells, the piano firm in London. Yeah. And he also played bugle and French horn in the army. But he also had his uncles. So his uncle would have been Stanley Earle, played for West Ham and Arsenal in the 1920s.
Yeah.
And then his father, Harry Earle, played in 1890-something through to the 1910 for what was then the London Ironworks. And he was a goalkeeper and also quite a comical character. He used to write limericks for the local press. So there's lots of, like... Yeah. Connotations and musical bits and pieces and crazy
and very creative family, because your son, who I remember only being a little tiny,
Gigi Gabriel,
is now he looks exactly like you as well.
Does he?
He does, doesn't he? he's all grown up. How old is he now?
He's 22 this
year.
Wow,
he's not, is he?
He is.
Wow,
it's frightening, isn't it?
And he's creative. He's in
he's been working as a film producer and a director, cutting his teeth that way. And now he works with Willany as a YouTube producer as well. So he's been doing that too. He's kind of the jack of all trades. He cut his teeth on Netflix shows like Catherine, and he worked on Silo as well, which I think is an Apple production.
Yeah.
And just he you know, here's a trick, right? He was really into, I think it was Arrested Development, the TV show, and he found out when they were filming a London edition, and he somehow was like, we're going to go and find out where it is, and he went up to London. This is in like February, a few years back. Scoped out where the film was going to be and just hung around the set with his mate Jimmy the whole day. And by lunchtime, they were chatting to the security guards who were bringing him cups of coffee because it was freezing. By early afternoon, they were chatting and had met the cast. And then by the end of the day, the producer and director came over and were like, right, who are you kids? What are you doing hanging around? And they're like, oh, we want to get into film.
Mm.
And he was like, right, here's my email address. Call me Monday morning. Email me Monday morning.
Wow.
So he did. Bless him, and that got him an opportunity to go and work on a TV show. So it does happen.
Yeah.
You know, just go scope out and be charming and just polite and hang around and you know, who knows?
You've got your track, The God of Small Things. When I heard it for the first time, I was like, wow, for me, it's different from all the stuff you've done
really?
Before. Yeah. I think you can tell it's you, but I think it's moved away from...
The single that you're listening to now, I'm going to release in March, end
Always
of March.
Always playing things too early.
No, I get it too early. No. I do that because I want you to play it early.
Thank
That's
you.
Absolutely fine. I love giving it to you guys. It's important that we get it out there. The album is a work in progress, and I've got a title for it, which is, I think I've got a title for it. You know how these things are, they're going to change, and that is Rumours of My Demise Have Been Greatly Exaggerated. that's my working title at the moment.
Yeah.
I might abbreviate it somehow. But I've got, I have Moleskine journals that I write my lyrics in, and every time I write an album or a story, I start a new journal. And sometimes songs get dragged from past journals and they kind of keep going. You must know this. You know, you have an idea and you go, I'm going to save that. And I rewrite and it appears and they appear again. But what I've tried to get into the habit of doing now is going out to open mic nights and just trialing some of these songs, which is something that I never used to do. Only because I don't even know why I didn't used to do it. I think because we were playing lots of gigs and, you know, you always have to have a tour and you're promoting the shows and that. So now I try and turn up randomly in places and just trial these things out.
Mm.
So that's been really, really helpful, and I've enjoyed doing that massively. So now I have these songs. I still haven't decided on which ones are going to be on the album or not, and who's going to be recording on them and working on them. But that's kind of how I go about doing all these bits and pieces.
And it is a full album. It's not an EP. It's a full album.
No, I'm going to do an album. Yeah, yeah. I don't, you know, come on. The art of writing an album is something that we mustn't lose. You know, I know that we have singles and EPs are great, and I appreciate the idea of singles, especially with the download and streaming market that's out there and has been out there recently. But I think that's all going to be coming to an end, not an end, but that's going to be evolving into something else soon. And yeah. I think there's massive longevity in the idea of an album and the identity of an artist, and that's something that we'll talk about later. But
so we're going to have some music.
Am I going to play?
Yeah, of course you are.
Oh, cool, okay.
Unless you want to join in, Roy.
Yeah, everybody grab an instrument. Let's just grab some things. Okay, let's do that.
Yes. Tell us about the song you're going to play.
Okay, so where do I start? I'm going to start with this little punky tune that I wrote a while ago, which has just been... I love... It's called Watching the World Go By. I wrote the lyrics. I keep writing verses for this thing. It's got about 27 verses, but I picked out the ones that I like, and it really is just... The what happened to punk and the people who played punk and where it all is now. So anyhow, this is called Watching the World Go By.
Sitting on the fence of opinion as the stones fly overhead from each side, I'm ducking the views of the political muses while the wind blows through the holes in my shoes, using history's bitch to scratch a vicious itch to justify the hurt and the pain. The easier task is wearing blame as a mask when the answer is a costly aim. Your safety pins rattle the punk within, but comfort's now a privileged gown. I'm watching the world go round. I'm watching the world go round. I'm watching the world go round. I'm watching the world. That's evolution, baby. Of confusion while the soldiers marching over my head load up on their bullet illusion, 'cause the ones in suits they said what they said. No, there is never enough of an existence of stuff that we can use to fill our empty desires. You can't get very car in this broken car when the morons have stolen the tires. Oh, the moral sin keeps me collapsing in. I find strength in the beauty of sound. I'm watching the world go round. Whoa! I'm watching the world go round. I'm watching the world go round. Whoa! I'm watching the
Roy here, because he can do the extra little bit of a
break. Yay! I'll do it as well.
That was fabulous.
Our studio audience.
Lovely. And thank also, you. When you know, as you're a looper,
yes.
When you do that live, you would probably would you be doing it with the drums and
yes.
the keys and everything else?
I do. I have, it goes nuts at the end, so I just loop that bit at the end, like yeah. into a full punk sort of So I love playing it. It's the lyrics that you've got to get bang on with that, because I enjoy singing about that. There's a real story to tell there, but yeah.
And it's great, just even with the guitar, because you've got the light. I always say you've got the light and shade. You've got great voice because you've got a powerful voice, and then you can sing very softly. So even with the guitar, it's got the interest.
Cool. I feel like you should feel that with a good tune, you should be able to pull people in a little bit and then blow them away.
Yeah.
You should feel like you're getting beaten up.
Looping. For people out there that might not understand what looping is, tell us if you were doing a gig where you're doing looping.
Yes, so I use two pedals. One of them I plug all my instruments via a mixing desk into, and that enables me to grab any instrument, and as I'm playing a part, I can record it. And then when I press play on the recording, it plays it back seamlessly over and over again. So as long as you get the first loop in, it all stays in time, and then I can drop other instruments in over the top of it. So I have two pedals. My vocal is on a separate looper, so I can record that separately. And it's just the fine art of creating a large noise as one human being.
Yeah.
And that's something that I really enjoyed doing. Very greedy, but I love playing instruments. I love playing bass and drums, and I took up piano a little while ago, and that's been a real eye-opener, and I've enjoyed playing that massively, and it's kind of opened my repertoire a bit more. And I do play with other musicians as well.
Yeah.
I'm not like Billy No Mates, but it's just one of those things that, you know, you could create such a massive sound, and it's so much fun.
Yeah.
And also it's one of those things I found that when I'm going out and playing, especially in the era of trying to make an eke a living out of this in the modern day, I've been able to keep myself afloat by having something that's visually entertaining as well, because I do look like a bit like trying to think of a good example, like Charlie Chaplin running around sweating like a madman as you grab instruments and try and make sure that you're there to catch the bits as you do them.
Yeah.
So it's visually very interesting as well, and I've been able to eke out a living doing that. So
a question I've been asking lots of musicians over the last year or two is, do you ever feel that when you're songwriting that a song comes through you from the universe and you write it so quickly that you're like, where did that come from?
Funnily enough, the God of Small Things. Yes, it does. I was ill for a while. I've been suffering with an illness with my foot called Burgess disease, which has kept me kind of out of my studio and away from things. And I, you know, when you're ill and you feel that kind of ill inside, almost cold inside, like a flu-y kind of feeling, I couldn't get over that for like a good month. And it was really depressing me. And then I was like, you know what, I'm tired of feeling like this. I'm going to just go to my studio, turn everything on, and just have a go. My kids helped me set a few bits and pieces up. I plugged everything in, and I played for about 8 hours. My foot was in so much. I mean, it wasn't in so much pain. The pain was irrelevant.
Mm.
The joy of playing. I played for seven, 8 hours, and my son came in like halfway through and was like, "Are you all right? You know, I mean, you've disappeared for half the day. We just want to check you're still alive and everything's okay." And I was like, "Oh my god!" I was in tears for moments. I was in manically laughing for moments. You know, bearing in mind, I was still on a lot of medication to try and clear up my head. But it was great. I mean, nothing had touched the sides like music did. And I was in there, and I had the idea for God of Small Things. And I obviously read, I don't know if you've read the book, The God of Small Things is a book, which is a wonderful book. I can't remember the name of the author. And I'd read that a few years before. And it's nothing to do with the song. It's just I always loved the title. And obviously being the Mighty Small, which is really, and that name came from being one person, creating something bigger than greater than the sum of its parts, as it were. That's where the idea of the name came from. And with the looping, it seemed relevant. It just kind of clicked into place. So the lyrics sort of just happened, and it kind of bubbled into place with that. So yes, I do. There's a prime example of it. I think Saturday Night was another one, which you and I worked on together, and you sung on. It was just one of those three chord turnarounds that just bopped along, and it just kind of automatically took place.
Mm.
It's kind of like divine intervention, isn't it? And that's one of the wonderful things about being musical and about picking up an instrument, and why I encourage people to do it. Whether you don't have to release anything or produce anything for the public, it can be incredibly personal, but as a healing and a way to heal and a way to get your mind out of the fog and away from negativity and all this kind of stuff, there is no better thing, in my opinion, than music.
Now, you've actually written a book.
I have.
You have been busy.
I've been busy. That was, I did that in COVID. Yeah. Well, and again, from that, what we were just saying, that principal idea was a friend of mine, a guy I know called Pud Christmas, who's a lovely bloke.
What a great name.
Isn't it?
Isn't it
just Pud? Yeah, Christmas. No, it isn't. But,
well,
Christmas is, but his surname is, but everybody would call him Pud. So, yeah, Pud Christmas. And he was one of the, he writes fantastic reviews. And he's not a reviewer. I think he works in insurance. I have no idea. Or accounting or something. But he used to come along to loads of my shows, and he would always write the most incredible review. And I used to say to him, you should be a writer. Mm. So he sent me some lyrics once, and was just, you know, can you add these to some music for us? And I did, sent them back to him, and I think he used one of the songs to propose to his now wife. And it just got me thinking about the processes that we went through. And I'd take my live looping rig into colleges and schools and teach kids, because you can literally create a song there and right here. Right, here's the idea. And the concept of taking a concept and within a few hours actually having a finished song that they could listen to just blew people's heads away. So that's where the idea for doing a book for anybody, it's called The Ultimate Absolute Beginner's Guide to Writing a Song.
Yeah.
And it really is it's like if you've never imagined yourself ever writing anything, and there's an option to do it on guitar and piano, and also an option to go, well, I don't want to play an instrument, I'm never going to play an instrument, so I'm just going to stick bits of loops together and create a song that way. I show you how to do all of those things, and obviously we delve into the concepts behind verses and choruses and bridges and how to write a melody. But I keep it really stupid simple, because that's how I wrote and that's how I write and how I need to write, with the idea of just making it very inclusive. And yeah, it's available on my website. It's a digital download. And now I'm putting together videos around the book, because people have asked me and gone, well, could you just show us how to strum a guitar? Would you mind going over the strumming idea again? So I've been sort of shoehorned into doing that, and I'm loving that. You know, I'm amazed and massively humbled by anybody who comes back to me and has any interest in anything I do, as I'm, you know, as a musician, because we get wrapped up in this kind of thing, don't we? And it's very easy to be, you know, I'm too old now to have an ego. Or at least that kind of an ego. So to have anybody interested in anything I have to say, or anybody interested in anything that I'm producing, is just massively humbling, and I'm really pleased. So,
and it's good when it's not friends and family. We love friends
absolutely,
and family.
Absolutely,
but when they come back, you get a stranger going, I really like what you're doing. You go, do you? So, do you? What's your name? Where do you live?
Yeah, Portland, Oregon. Oh, my God, someone in Portland, Oregon's listening to something I did. How mad is that, you know? Or wherever in the world. And now we have that technology that can, or we have for a number of years, that can connect us in so many ways. I find that amazing, and that wonderfully
humbling. I think we should have some more music. What do you think, Roy?
I think so. Yeah.
Shall I?
Roy's agreeing again. What song are you going to play next?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay, so this one I do live, and it's sort of like Echo and the Bunnymen meets the Stone Roses. But obviously I'm not going to be able to do that on an acoustic guitar, but it's called May You Never Lose Your Wonder. And it goes like this. Obsessive child, your curiosity went wild. Through rain and thunder cloud, may you never lose your wonder. Your passionate youth, full of spirit and juice. When life storms hit you, may you never lose your wonder, wonder, wonder. It's the why of it all. It's the why of it all. Don't laze in ignorant slumber. May you never lose your wonder. Star, you're always close to my heart. When you seem lost and afar, may you never lose your wonder. And spirited girl, climb on top of your world. And when life's lines begin to show, may you never lose your wonder, wonder, wonder. It's the why of it all. It's the why of it all. Don't laze in ignorant slumber. May you never lose your wonder. He gave love his all, and he never lost his wonder, wonder, wonder. It's the why of it all.
Now, we were talking about off air about the music industry, and I know that a lot of musicians can write music, but then it's all doing the production. You've got to get somebody in. I know you do everything normally yourself, but you've got to get produced, you've got to get it mixed, engineered, then you've got to maybe get physical copies of CDs if you want to make some money, merchandise. And it isn't just about being a songwriter anymore. And you were saying about you know, what people need to do, and it's especially important to get email addresses.
Well, yes. And who am I to tell people what to do? But so in my experience, you've got two things. You've got the music business and you've got the business of music, and they're two very different things. And obviously the music business is about writing material and writing songs, and the wonderful processes that come along with that, and it's joyous, don't get me wrong. I love producing material, I love playing instruments, I love writing songs. All of those things are just wonderful. And then on the flip side, you have the business of music, which is the how do you get your stuff out there. Really, it's about marketing and sales, and one of the things we're seeing certainly in today's society is how quickly things like social platforms come up and appear and disappear, and how quickly the music scene in many ways changes, especially with the idea of streaming. So one thing we're teaching, and I'm trying to install in a lot of the younger people, and well, anybody who I work with, is the concept of owning your mailing list, which is, when you think about it, emails, phone numbers, these are the kind of things that we have for a lifetime, or at least for the majority of your lifetime. We don't really change those things very often. So the importance I'm trying to instill in people is to collect these. communities and to start interacting on a personal level, one through your email, through newsletters, and communicating with your fan base that way, and taking back control from that point of view and perspective. And it does, you can still put stuff up on Spotify, on platforms like that, but as we're seeing it becoming harder and harder to make money in the industry that way, there's a certain joy in being exclusive and taking your fan base with you. And that's something that I'm seeing from in every walk of life, not just musicians, sports celebrities, actors, authors, just about having that personal connection with people. And now that communication is so free and so available on a global scale, it makes perfect sense trying to collate those email addresses so that you have that, and then offering special one-off opportunities or limited edition versions of things. All of those things are massively important because you just don't know where an artist is going to end up. You could end up owning a Van Gogh, you could end up owning a Bowie original, you know, or something along those lines. So there is incentive for a fan or somebody who follows an artist to pick up on that and to sort of get in there early, if you like, and own a part of history. You just never know. And that, to me, is something that's really important and will stand you in good stead if you can do that.
And also, as a musician, you want to be able to earn money, and that's the best way to actually monetize what you do. And and people sometimes say they come down to different gigs or you see different musicians. And my sister said about a guitarist, Tommy, who was playing at Uber Jam. She went, "Why isn't he famous?" I said, "But you don't know. Maybe he is because he might have 100,000 followers that buy every single thing he does. But he's not out in. He's not like a Beyonce.
Yeah.
There's only so many spaces for the big sort of
and
artists.
And they're tiny percentages, right? Yeah. The top tier who are making billions and billions and reaching it seems reaching everybody and are on our platforms all the time. That's a percent of a percent. That's like a fraction of a percent of the music industry. So if you think of it in these terms, what you really need to have a good income, I mean, an income where you can afford to have a mortgage, for example, is somewhere in the region of 50 to 75,000 fans or email addresses. And then to be able to communicate with those people and to be able to release something, let's say an album and a maybe an album and a couple of videos and perhaps even a book or some imagery once a year, and for a portion of that mailing list to buy into that, and you can make good money. You can make enough money to, which would be the same as working a sort of £30,000 a year or £40,000 a year day job. But it does take work, and it does take hard work and effort, and you have to be creative on every level, I think, in some ways. Or if you're in a band, utilize the creativity within a band. So some of you might write music, some of you might make pictures. Find that sweet spot that works for you, and then interact with your fan base, and just that's the best way to build longevity into a career. And you know, like you say, some of my favorite artists most people have never heard of, and will never hear of, and their music and their material will be around for years and years to come. But that's the beautiful thing of it, right? Leaving that legacy to me is just, what else are you going to do with your life?
Because once it's out there, it's out there.
Exactly.
Somebody can, you know, new music is new music to your ears. So if you hear a band that released something like 15, 20 years ago, if it's the first time you've heard it, it's fresh.
You know, the best time, the funniest, one of the most sweetest moments I've ever had, and one of the things that rang true with this is my eldest, when he was like 12 years old, came up to me and said, Dad, you need to listen to something. Like, listen to Led Zeppelin. And you know when they're 12 and you're thinking to yourself, I'm not going to stamp on your dreams there. So I'm like, really? I will give it a listen.
Yeah.
And then I gave it a few weeks, obviously. I think the penny dropped and he realised, oh, actually, these guys have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And I pulled out a few albums and played them the albums. But it was one of those moments when you're kind of like, wow, this 12-year-old kid discovering Led Zeppelin for the first time. Oh, my God, how I'd love to have that. First band, or not first band, but one of the earlier bands of Morena's, we were just really bullshit about. We had a lot of belief, and we wouldn't take no for an answer, and we were loud and very punky, and I had great musicians. I mean, the drummer and the bass player in that band, Steve Wilson and Tim Jackson, kind of wrote the book on their instruments. So, you know, when you've got a rhythm section like that behind you, you can do no wrong. And we were the musicians' band, so musicians would come and watch us play, you know, which was, I found, really difficult because you got no interaction from the audience. Because everybody's like, oh, either uber critical or just blown away, to the degree where they're just standing there watching. So I found that difficult as someone who wrote the melodies and was very passionate in my performances. I wanted to affect people more, but I forgot my point now, but anyway, it was wonderful to be part of that. And I think it's possible to get to that point with as an independent artist, where you can produce your stuff, release your stuff, and get into a chart. And again, you know, that's these things kind of, it's like releasing a book. If you release a book around February time, it's the shortest month, and most authors don't release in February. Mm. So you have a very good chance of being low numbers, but still hitting high rankings. So yeah. These things, you know, you can study them. There's lots of information online about the best times to release songs, about time of the month you should release, about the processes that go behind releasing it. So you can manipulate that.
Yes, so much information. It can be mind-blowing sometimes when you're going, don't mention the name of the song. Just put out little clips, but don't say what it's about. Mm. Don't do a pre-save, because nobody does them anymore.
Yeah.
So there's so much info. And also, I've noticed as well, I don't know if it's Rihanna, it's one of the big sort of American singers, are actually, they're in discussions to do digital gigs. So say digital, what I mean is virtual gigs. That's another way that they, because obviously with big artists like that, they make millions when they do gigs. If you're looking at little bands like further down that are quite famous, they actually lose money probably doing a tour. So that's the next thing that will be, where you'll have people like Beyonce, people like Rihanna, maybe Coldplay actually doing gigs online that you can basically go on and watch them online rather than actually going to a concert.
Well, I know
Coldplay have already done something similar
even,
to that.
Further back, the Chili Peppers did something like that, and it was a cinema thing. So I remember taking my son, who was really, really little, to the Odeon in town and to watch a live performance of the Chili Peppers playing in California.
Yeah.
And it was just spread around the world, and it was one of those concerts where they're like, it was the most attended concert in the history of concerts. Of course it was, because it was in every theater from here to wherever. So there are loads of scope for doing that, the live performance. I do a thing on a Wednesday. I haven't done it this year yet. I'm going to start it again, but I do a thing on a Wednesday where I do the songwriting thing, and I'll just do it from my little studio at home, live performance, and people would chirp in and ask questions or criticize, or, you know, we'll pull songs apart and that kind of stuff. And it gets really good numbers. It's kind of like you're replacing the sort of modern day TV schedule, as it were, just giving people the option to clock in on something like that. So there's longevity in that as an idea.
And rather than, you know, buy your coffee, buy a song. Go on to Bandcamp. A lot of the musicians that were on this show have Bandcamp. You can pay £1 for a song, or you can pay £10 for a song if you like it. Or you can order a CD. Although people don't have CDs, you're getting a physical copy that might be signed and all sorts of bits and pieces. And that's another great way to support musicians. Now, you're going to do another track for us.
Yes. And rather than do the single which you've been playing and redo that one, I thought I might do something different. Ooh. Shall I do that? A new one?
Yes. I thought Bob was going to start joining in with clapping. Then
you
for a second.
Do
you play harmonica, Bob?
No,
thank God.
Right, so this is actually, if we get closer around Christmas time, I'll come back and play the Christmas version of this, because I've got Christmas lyrics for this.
Yeah,
but I've never really done it. It just happened to have that kind of thing. So,
and what's the song called?
This is called "I Miss You." A lonesome boy, tough and tall, needs a steady hand to prevent his fall. She gave a little love, she got a whole lot more. When they came together, you hear the voices soar. They would drown the streets in harmonies, light up childhood memories for everyone, for everyone. The tales of feats, the late night meets, sitting by the fire while the old folks sleep, waiting for the moment they could slip away. And looking in her eyes, you can hear him say, I miss you. Oh, I've missed you. Ooh, I miss my friends passing out on the kitchen floor. So much more to be thankful for. $1 billion girl and a small change boy.
She plays them like a guitar. They make the sweetest noise. Well, on a Friday night, they can always be found. Just mixing up a melody. You just follow the sound. They would drown the streets in harmonies, light up childhood memories for everyone. The tales of feats, the late night meets, sitting by the fire while the old folks sleep, waiting for the moment they could slip away. And looking in her eyes, you can hear him say, just loosen the noose. Turn your ear to the skies. You can still hear those tunes. Oh, the sweetest of rhythms and the deepest of blues. They will drown the streets in harmonies, light up childhood memories for everyone. The late night meets, sitting by the fire while the old folks sleep, waiting for the moment we could slip away. And looking in her eyes, you can hear him say,
that is Paolo Morena there, also known as the Mighty Small. And you will find him across social media everywhere. He's on TikTok, he's on Facebook, he's on Instagram, and he's on Bandcamp as well if you want to download any of his music. And he's on Spotify. But best thing is, if you like a track, go and buy it, because it helps musicians be able to record and make future music.
You can find it on my website as well, which is firstnamelastname.com. So Paolo, P-A-O-L-O, Morena, M-O-R-E-N-A.com.
There we go. That was amazing. Thank you. Always classy.
Always fun to be here, and always lovely to see you guys. So thanks for having me.